Are you ready for the weekend yet? We have events, news, and a guest for you to enjoy this Lake Life weekend. Hello and welcome to Lake Life Weekend 47. We have Thanksgiving week and I hope you're all happy and gathering with your family. Happy Thanksgiving. Thank you for tuning in. And before we hear from John Anderson, a turkey farmer of 40 years history, third generation and former president of the Minnesota Turkey Growers Association, who also served on the National Board of Turkey Growers. Very interesting insights on turkey farming, the role that Minnesota plays in the nation, and also how we came to celebrate Thanksgiving with the bird, with a turkey. And of course, Frazee, the hometown of John Anderson. So please stay tuned to learn about all this. Before that, I was going to share a couple news items and some events. This weekend is packed with activities. Deer meat donation helps nearly 300 local families, reports the DNR. The Minnesota DNR and the Minnesota Department of Agriculture have created a program in Minnesota that allows deer hunters to donate deer meat to food shelves and feeding programs. I think that's a really a great program. Find more on the permfocus.com website, and we have a link on lakelifeweekend.com for you. Another news item here, City Council meets to discuss improvements on truck loop in Perham on Monday night to discuss and improve a resolution and apply for funds that would let the city make repairs to the final segment of the city's 8-mile truck loop. Also a link and some insights on our website. This weekend's events, Parade of Trees at the American Legion in Lake Park, November 23rd through 26th, starts at 8 a.m. on Thanksgiving Day and lasts through November 26th, 5 p.m. We have the opening day of Detroit Mountain, November 24th, 10 a.m. through 9 p.m. More details on DetroitMountain.com. The beginning of Young Life Christmas tree sales also here at Washington Avenue in Detroit Lakes on November 24th, 10 a.m. Lighting Up Virgus, a event on Saturday, November 25th, 5 p.m. through 8 p.m. Virgus will light up for the Christmas season cookies, cacao, live native scene, and holiday shopping. And there will be actually some animals from the zoo and also like a little crib installation for Christmas. I heard Santa is coming through town also, so that is a family event this Saturday in Virgus, maybe a reason to visit. There's also a festival of trees at the historic Holmes Theater in Detroit Lakes, November 25th, 5 p.m. through 9 p.m. A grand parade of lights downtown Detroit Lakes on November 27th, 5 p.m. through 6 p.m. And that was it for now. More and all included on our website, www.lakelifeweekend.com. Please drive there for the complete schedule. And now stay tuned for our interview with John Anderson about turkey and Thanksgiving. Have a wonderful weekend. Yes, welcome to Weekend 47. I'm here with John Anderson. We will be talking about turkey traditions and Thanksgiving. And hello, John.
Hi, Derek. Glad to be here.
Thank you for coming. Short notice, I realize we have Thanksgiving. And as the audience knows, I'm not originally an American. I'm fairly new to the traditions. And I was curious to learn about the history and visiting Frazee regularly. I see the largest turkey of the world. But before you give us an insight as a turkey farmer about Thanksgiving and what we do locally in Lakes Country to contribute to this festivity in the nation, tell us a little bit about John. You are from Lakes Country?
Yes, I'm a lifelong resident of the Lakes Country here. And Like I said, I lived here all my life. I'm a third generation turkey farmer. So my grandfather started raising turkeys back in the 1930s. And he continued to raise turkeys throughout the 30s, 40s. Back then, the average farmer, you know, he had a half a dozen turkeys and some chickens, a couple of cows, a couple of beef cows, and, you know, that was kind of the family farm. And as time went by, you know, more farmers were specializing in things, and dairy farmers would grow their dairy herds, and they would get out of the hog farming and the turkey farming and those kinds of things. And my grandfather decided that he didn't like to milk cows very well, so he decided to get into the turkeys. And so, you know, it kind of all started in that vein, that he would continue to raise turkeys rather than mess with the other animals, you know.
So I interrupt real quick. So we have that, I call it, let's say, a picture book farm,
correct.
Red barn,
yeah.
Like we know it when we read a child
exactly.
story. We have some chicken, we have a couple of cats. And so your grandfather came, I understand, Sweden? Norwegian?
Norway, yeah.
Anderson?
Mm-hmm.
And sorry about that.
Sure.
Scandinavian, I was
going
to say. So immigrated from Norway and started a traditional farm. And then in the 40s, 50s, was it depression? Or what was it, World War? That he had to focus on one breed?
Well, actually, it was more a function of the times. You know,
okay.
As farms were getting bigger, as you know, each farm was relatively small, you know, and they fed their family and a few of the neighbors. And then as urban sprawl and people started moving to the city, you know, the farmer decides that they've got to get a little bit bigger so that they can start feeding these people in the city. And so they had to diversify some, but then they had to specialize as well. So
operating it more as a business than feeding the family.
Right. Right.
Growing it to a certain, I'm really not a farmer,
growing
everybody
it, yeah,
knows this
yeah.
probably here, but okay.
Yeah. Growing it to an optimal size so that they can, you know, they can feed their family from what they raise, plus they can also feed the rest of the world, of course. And, you know, my grandfather decided that, you know, turkey farming, we still had a few beef cows and those kinds of things as my father took over, but the industry was more focused on specializing. So you either raised strictly turkeys or strictly hogs, or you know, and that's kind of the way the farming is today. You know, you don't see these multi animal type farms. Yeah,
and that all happened here directly in the Frazee area.
Well, nationwide.
Where was your family farm?
Our family farm was here in the Frazee area.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry, we didn't talk about that. So,
sure. Yeah.
So was your grandfather one of the first to introduce the turkey to the Frazee? Why do we have the largest turkey?
Why Frazee? Huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Sure. Well, there were a few area farmers that started specializing in the turkeys, and it was nothing magical about it. I mean, it was just something that some decided to do. Well, then in Frazee, they decided to build a small turkey hatchery, where they would bring turkey hatching eggs into the hatchery, custom hatch those eggs, and then ship out, you know, a baby turkey is called a poult, a baby chicken's a pullet,
oh.
but the baby turkey's called a poult. So when these poults would hatch from the eggs, then they'd bring those out to other farmers where they could raise them, because it's more efficient to have it all done in one spot rather than the farmer putting in 500 eggs into an incubator and then trying to get those eggs to hatch.
Sure.
So, you know, it developed into a growing little industry in Frazee as a small hatchery. Eventually, a processing plant was put up so that at the end of the turkey's life cycle, they would be processed, and then that's the ones that ended up in the grocery stores.
So we hatched. So Frazee became a hatchery destination,
yeah, kind
and
of.
Then it was brought out, and then they were fed up.
Yes.
And then they were delivered back into
right.
the processing
right.
facility.
Yep. They started in Frazee and they would end in Frazee.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah.
But the you know the and that was our specialty was the breeder turkeys, the hatching eggs.
Okay.
And we would raise the turkeys to a breeding age, and then they would get bred They'd start laying eggs. These eggs were between 90 and 95% fertile. So, you know, we had to candle the eggs to see, you know, the fertility rates of the eggs as they were being hatched.
Candle means under the light?
Candle, yeah. Yeah, you put them under a light after, you know, 12 or 13 days of incubation, and then they can, if they can see the white or the spot in the egg, then they know that that egg is incubating.
Okay.
If there's no spot, then the egg never got fertilized. So.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
And so your grandfather started in the hatchery industry?
Actually, in the breeding part of it.
Oh, yeah. Breeding, okay.
Yep. He, in fact, he was one of the first turkey farmers in Becker County to use artificial light in raising turkeys. Now, light has quite a bearing in the life cycle of a bird. You know, any bird needs at least 12 hours of daylight in order to start producing eggs. That's why birds in the wild only breed in the spring, because the day length is starting to get to 12 hours and longer. So and there's a big long word called photoperiodic stimulation. And that's what stimulates the hormones in the turkeys to start producing eggs within them. So when this hormone is going through their bodies, producing eggs at a regular interval, a turkey will lay an egg probably every 26 hours until it has what they call a clutch of eggs or a group of eggs, anywhere from 12 to 18 eggs. And then once they have that big nest of eggs, then Mother Nature tells them it's time for you to sit on the eggs and hatch them. So their egg production is done. And then they'll hatch, you know, in the wild they can hatch up to 80%, you know, 80% of their clutch may hatch into small poults.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've seen in our area some of the wild turkeys,
yep.
You know, you'll see in the springtime a hen with a whole brood of turkeys behind her, you know, and those were the result of her clutch of her hatch.
Yeah.
So it's in order for us to have turkey production year round, we have to regulate when turkeys get sunlight and when turkeys are in the dark. So they are kept in a dark environment, sometimes in the summertime, in order for us to put light on those turkeys in the fall or winter, in order for them to start producing eggs at different times of the year. So it's a way to regulate, you know, just like we get strawberries in the wintertime, but we can't grow strawberries here, but, you know, elsewhere they plant strawberries at different times of the year so that we can have ripe strawberries all year long. This way we can have turkey all year long so that we keep...
Yeah, I get it.
Keep the flow going.
But one second, you mentioned in one brief sentence, so your grandfather was one of the first to start or regulate those cycles,
right, yeah.
And was used artificial. Did you have to use UV light or like a certain frequency of light? Or?
You had to have a certain lumens, certain brightness, and incandescent bulbs would produce just, you know, enough light to produce the lumens that they need to stimulate that production.
Huh. So. Okay, that's...
So we're kind of getting off the track here.
Yeah, it's really
fascinating. The beginning of the turkey, but, you know, yeah. So then I began turkey farming when I was out of college in the early 80s and was on the family farm for, 25 to 30 years, and still produced eggs, turkey hatching eggs for a much larger hatchery. We'd send our eggs to hatcheries that were hatching anywhere from, you know, 15 to 100 million turkeys a year. So
really?
Yeah. So, but, you know, getting back to the Thanksgiving theme.
Yeah.
You know.
So, let's organize this.
Sure.
So one second. So we learned a lot. I'm really fascinated. I guess
Frazee, you know, kind of was the turkey capital of Minnesota for quite some time.
Yeah.
Another pioneer in our industry from Frazee was Marvin Mickelson, who...
I heard the name.
Yeah.
He
was instrumental in a lot of the production and a lot of the industry in Frazee. And also he was the founder of the Frazee Turkey Days celebration, which started back in the 50s.
Okay.
And... that was to celebrate the turkey industry in the area.
Sure.
And then several years later, we commissioned a sculptor to make the world's largest turkey.
Yeah, I know. I see
and
it all
I
time.
See, and you know, they put it out near the highway, so busy road where people can see it.
Yeah, you visit.
And that turkey, you know, was kind of the shining star for Frazee as people entered the town.
Yeah.
And well, then after several years of the turkey standing there, with inspections, people found that this structure was not safe anymore. So they decided to take the turkey down.
Oh, really?
And replace it with a new one.
Oh.
And a couple of my friends, and it's kind of a famous postcard. You may have seen a postcard of the Frazee area from a few years back where my friends were cutting this turkey down with a cutting torch.
Oh.
And of course, the turkey was made of fiberglass. So a few sparks and a few flames got where they shouldn't have.
I didn't know that story.
Yeah.
It started burning.
It started burning, and it burned fast. I mean, those guys couldn't hardly run away from that turkey fast enough, and it was totally engulfed in flames.
Oh.
So the burning turkey is one of the sights to see when you're perusing through postcards and stuff of Frazee. But any long story short, I guess the turkey was replaced with a new one, and still are.
So let's talk a little bit more industry and learn. Let's learn from me. How did Thanksgiving, how did that all happen, and why is it the turkey? So I know from my son, who goes to third grade now, that the pilgrims and the native, they celebrated a Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Very early on, that must be almost 300 years ago.
Yeah, about somewhere. That. Yeah. And back in the 1600s when the pilgrims came.
Close, 400 almost. Yeah. So exactly. So, and then can you share the tradition a little bit deeper for me, and how did it become the turkey?
When the pilgrims came across, there were a lot of foods indigenous to the North American continent that they weren't familiar with in Europe.
Yeah.
Corn was one thing that the Indians had developed, and turkeys are indigenous to North America, where nobody had ever seen a turkey before. And how the turkey became the Thanksgiving meal is still up for debate. But when you look back at all the photographs and all the paintings of the first Thanksgiving and the historical, all the history behind the first Thanksgivings, you picture this big turkey on the table.
Okay.
And it was the Native American people that brought the turkeys and brought the corn and brought other foods that and made a feast out of it. And that was when the pilgrims and the Native American people decided, this was a very thankful time. So that's how we celebrate, is with the turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 100 some years later, I guess, thinking back to the beginning of our country, Benjamin Franklin wanted to make the turkey the national bird.
Really?
Now, if that would have happened, we'd probably be eating bald eagle for Thanksgiving. So, so kind of a little sidebar there that,
because it was a native bird.
It was a native bird
to
North America. And,
interesting.
Yeah. But I guess the other founding fathers thought that the eagle was more majestic than the turkey.
And it...
It turns
kind
out
of
that
is.
It is.
Yeah, it sure is.
Yep.
Interesting. So it was always celebrated. So the turkey has huge relevance.
Yes. The turkey has got a big presence on everyone's table at Thanksgiving. An interesting fact, and I'm reciting this from my turkey history because I was I was the president of the Minnesota Turkey Growers Association back in 1999,
mm-hmm.
and I was on the National Board of Turkeys for a couple of years. And being in that position, my philosophy and my position was also to promote turkey, of course, and that's the job of the association and the also the Minnesota Turkey Research and Promotion Council. And, you know, our job is to get people to eat more turkey. Minnesota used to be, or years ago, was the number one turkey producing state in the nation. For a few years, North Carolina took over, mainly because some of the big corporate farms were expanding rapidly and wanted to get turkey to the East Coast much quicker. So they decided to build these huge operations in North Carolina. Well, it turns out that it's really expensive to truck feed ingredients to North Carolina. The weather is hot and humid, and it's very
tough on the bird.
Tough on the turkey, yeah, yeah. So a lot of those farms didn't make it, and now Minnesota's back to being number one again.
Oh, really? So we are the largest?
We are the largest turkey-producing state in the country.
Okay, I did not know that.
And and because of that, you know, well, one of the main reasons is because we have, we're right in the middle of corn country and soybean country, you know, so it costs much less to truck those raw materials and commodities to feed mills to get feed made for the turkeys. So it's just, it's a
logistically,
it makes sense. Even though our winters are harsh, turkeys are not susceptible to real, you know, cold weather. They are susceptible to disease and a lot of bacteria and stuff that, you know, can cause some problems. But, you know, they can stand cold weather. It's close to 50 million turkeys that Minnesota produces in a year.
50 million?
Yeah.
Live bird?
Live bird.
Being delivered as a full bird to a family and the shop.
Well, no, Minnesota produces 50 million, and some of those, you know, 50% of the poults that are hatched are hens, and 50% are toms. Now, the tom is a bigger bird, of course, than the hen.
Okay.
Normally twice the size.
Really?
Yeah. And can grow quite a bit faster than a hen. So it depends on what age they get processed at as to what the demand is at the time. You know, if the market demands a 15-pound turkey.
Question though, so the turkey we raise, male and female, isn't it, at least in Europe, there's always this like that, and the chicken, the male chicken, the rooster, they get like sorted out.
Yeah.
So they, it's like for the soup. I don't know.
Right.
So at the, so it's actually not healthy, I'm sorry, but it's
It's an undesirable, the rooster is undesirable in the chicken industry.
Yeah, for some reason.
Yeah.
Maybe less meat.
Right.
And so in our
because
turkey, it's actually more desirable because it's a larger bird.
Right, right.
That's why we have the big ones and the
right,
small ones.
Right, right. You know, if you're going to buy a 20 to 22 pound whole bird for Thanksgiving, a great big turkey, it's going to be a tom. It's going to be the male. If you want a 12 to 14 pound, that's going to be a hen. So, and then of course a lot of the turkey goes into further processing. So when, you know,
for
turkey bacon, turkey salami, turkey sausage, turkey ham, you know, all those further processed meats have been taken from the bone and taken to another plant to be further processed into something. Deli meat, those kinds of things. But so of the 50 million turkeys that Minnesota raises, about 80% of them are exported to other states. Interesting fact on Thanksgiving is between 45 and 47 million turkeys are consumed.
Wow.
As a whole bird. So almost the entire production of the largest turkey producing state in the Union is consumed on Thanksgiving Day. Now, if we could get more people to celebrate Thanksgiving three or four times a year, it would be a big boon to the turkey industry. But,
but yeah, interesting fact. So the whole year's state production is consumed on one single day.
Correct.
Wow, that's a lot of birds.
Yeah.
Huh. Is it, I know that a lot of people, and we do eat turkey in Germany too, it's Pute or the chicken, And it's, I don't know if it's a leaner meat even as chicken, or I don't know what the right term is, but is it more healthy than chicken? What's the real different nutrition? Can you tell me about the nutrition of a turkey versus a chicken or like a pork? Like, what is so good about, is it a really beautiful meat?
Well, the biggest difference between like a pork and a beef, you know, those kinds of red meats and stuff, and chicken and turkey is that the turkey, the fat of the turkey is not within the meat. It's on the exterior, just under the skin.
Sure.
Whereas if you get a big marbled steak, you know, you've got fat within the meat.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's all incorporated into your steak. Whereas if you grab a big drumstick and you take the skin and the fat off, you've got nothing but 100% meat.
Meat. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's one, why it's a healthier meat? Because, you know,
yeah,
people always say it's a healthier meat.
Well,
I don't know what that means.
And it's very high in protein, of course, you know, and it's low in fat. So, you know, people that have low fat diets, turkey's a great substitute.
Okay.
For beef and pork and those kinds of meats.
And, you know, in Europe, maybe you probably know better than the average consumer, we are very like protective about animals and antibiotics and all that and mass production. It's not judging, but I guess it's all the experience that I have with all the whatever I know, the little knowledge that I have. So, and you mentioned earlier that they are receptive to bacteria or illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And I see those farms here, they're always, they're not caged, you know, chicken are always, for some reason,
right.
Okay. So they are
They're free to
roaming.
Roam through the floors of the
and
yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So are they, are they healthy animals? Obviously they're healthy.
Generally, generally they are.
So, so they're really, it's a quality product?
Yep, yeah, and a very quality product. And there are strict rules on farms for disease control.
Okay.
You know, there's strict authorization. You don't enter a turkey farm without permission. When you do, you dress up in a white coverall, you take a shower. A lot of them are shower in, shower out programs where you have to take a shower, get into their clothes, walk, you know, if you're going to walk through the turkeys and check them, come back, take a shower, and leave again. The diseases that turkeys, you know, you hear of the avian influenza. You know, there was a huge outbreak of avian influenza in the turkey and chicken industry here about 3-4 years ago.
Yeah.
That devastated a lot of turkey growers, not only in Minnesota, but in Illinois and Iowa and you know, across the country. And, you know, those types of things are, they're not 100% preventable because the fact that most of the avian influenza is carried through migratory birds. So,
yeah.
You know, ducks and geese migrating through the area, you know, if one decides to stop at a turkey farm, sheds some of its, you know, a lot of the migratory birds are carriers of the disease but will not exhibit any sort of
symptoms
of the disease. So, you know, they're
okay.
And it can devastate, you know, flocks of turkeys. So, you know, there's a lot of biosecurity involved where, you know, you got to keep those birds protected from those kinds of things. And they get vaccinated frequently, but there are no hormones ever used in the turkey industry.
Okay.
Throughout the years, the turkeys have gotten bigger as far as, you know, getting...
Genetically?
Yeah. And it's mainly through breeding,
mm-hmm.
selective breeding.
Okay.
Where you know, years ago... It would take you 15 weeks to get a 12-pound turkey. Now you can get, now it's almost reversed, where you can get a 15-pound turkey in 12 weeks.
Mm.
So the turkeys are growing a little faster. They're gaining weight properly without the use of any type of hormones.
Mm-hmm.
And on that same note, if you notice wild turkeys, they're bronze colored, you know,
mm-hmm.
beautiful birds. They got the big plume and all the color, the bronze, shiny color to them. That was the norm several years ago. Before 1955 or so, all turkeys were that color, you know. And a guy by the name of George Nicholas was able to selectively breed the turkeys to a white color. And the reason they wanted to do that was when they took the bronze turkey to the processing plant and started pulling the feathers out, the feathers had a dark colored dye on the inside, which was the color of the feathers.
Sure.
So when that dye would come out, it would stain the skin of the turkey and it just didn't look good. So when they put it in a bag, people would look at this turkey and say, you know, that doesn't really look right. So he was able to create a white turkey and then breed that nationally.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the only reason why
that's
we have
that. That's the only reason why we have a white turkey now.
Because of the
So
ink
now when they pull
it,
when they pull feathers out of a white turkey, you don't, there's no dye in it.
No dye.
Yeah.
It's an interesting
bit of trivia there
for
the turkey.
But genetically it derives from the wild turkey and is actually that young, that breed.
Right.
Just from the 50s and just the consumer demand,
The consumer just didn't like that
look.
Stained skin look on a whole bird, so.
Do you hunt for turkey wild?
You know what? I have never hunted for wild turkeys, but we've had, you know, wild turkeys on the farm. We're not a big fan of wild turkeys because there again, we got disease carriers in the wild. We've had to take motorcycles and four-wheelers and stuff and chase these turkeys away from our barns, you know, because if we have a screen door open in the barn and a wild turkey comes along and they start pecking through the screen and they're starting to make contact with our domestic turkeys, that's kind of a no-no.
Oh.
So we get on our four-wheelers and we go and chase the turkeys back out, you know, and try to keep them away from.
Yeah.
And of course, we encourage hunters to come and shoot wild turkeys on our farms.
Yeah.
So that, you know, it's kind of damage control.
How big of a farm did you operate?
The farm that I operated, of course, we raised some small grains too. Part of the operation, the bedding for the turkeys was straw bedding. So we would raise small grains and sell the grain and we'd keep the straw. So then we'd bale the straw up and use that as bedding throughout the year.
Oh.
So we farmed about, and we had, at one point we had about 1,000 acres, but we'd farm about 600 of it and the rest was woodland and stuff like that. But, and then we raised, we raised enough breeder hens to produce about 1.5 million turkey eggs a year. So anywhere from 20 to 60,000 turkeys a year. And then, And of course, each being in the breeder business, turkeys don't mate naturally as far as getting them to produce consistent high fertilities. So we have to artificially inseminate turkeys.
Really?
And that has to be done once a week for each turkey. So we had a specialized crew that comes in, and 5 days a week, their job is just to pen off the turkeys, inseminate each one at a time, go to the next barn, do the same thing.
So there's a lot of work.
7 days later, you start over and you go back through the first. Yeah, it's a very highly labor-intensive business.
Wow. How many turkey farmers in the area still? Are we are still a big?
Yes, big producing area here.
For Minnesota?
Yes.
Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
How many farmers is it?
That number is kind of dwindling because of the fact that the
corporate
bigger. Yep. There are some big turkey operations that are becoming vertically integrated, in which they raise the turkeys, they raise the breeder hens, they have their own feed mills, they have their own processing plants. You know, so they're integrated from top to bottom.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Here in our area?
In this area, in Minnesota.
In Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but there I would say within a 100-mile radius here, there's probably 30 to 35 independent turkey growers.
And then do you have a rough estimate how many of the 50 million, how many are coming from our area?
I would say in that 100-mile radius, we probably have 15% of the Minnesota production.
Wow.
Otter Tail County used to be the largest county. This was many years ago, but Otter Tail County used to produce the most turkeys
in
per county in the state. Yeah.
Wow.
Now I believe it's Candiohi County or Morrison County or one of the southern counties. But
Wow. So we have a long turkey tradition.
I mean, long history, yes.
We have the largest turkey in the world, of course, again. Yep. And we have turkey days. And really interesting. Do you have a favorite recipe, or is everybody doing the same turkey? I guess we have stuffing, and then I have been to a couple, celebrated a few times, but do you have a secret on how to prepare a turkey on Thanksgiving? There's people now, I think, deep frying it. I see all those little gadgets. Yeah. It's like, do you have a favorite, how do you eat your turkey?
My favorite way has been, and always will be probably, is an injection. I'm just buying a whole bird. You know, of course you can go to the store and you can pay top dollar for a butterball. You know, the butterball is the king of turkeys. You know, it's the one that they inject butter into the turkey, and the butterball name is, you know, just the name itself is worth billions. But
I didn't
my know. My favorite personally is just to go buy the cheapest turkey you can find, and I've got a recipe that you mix water, warm water, with lemon juice, some salt, some Tabasco sauce, and some garlic juice, and you make that mixture up. It's about probably a quart and a half or so of actual injection liquid. And then you take that with a large syringe, you know, a 60 to 100 milliliter syringe, and a long needle, and you pull that injection into the syringe, and you just inject it into several different spots of the turkey. Usually, you know, within 12 hours before you cook it, and then, you know, you put it back in the refrigerator, refrigerate it till you're going to roast it again. It can be roasted in the oven. My favorite is putting it on a Weber grill.
Really?
Yep. You just put it in an aluminum pan, put the turkey in the pan, inject it with that injection, and then put it on the Weber grill, shut the cover, and walk away from it. Don't even look at it for at least an hour and a half.
So charcoal grill.
Charcoal grill.
Yeah, I love charcoal.
You can do it on a gas grill too, but like I said, this is my favorite. I mean, you can't
beat. No stuffing?
You can stuff it. I just throw some stovetop on the stuffing, on the stove, you know. You can stuff them too.
But like you do it without stuffing.
I do it without stuffing, yeah.
And then what side? I mean, I'm getting a little hungry here. But so what is your side then? Is it just, mashed potatoes or gravy?
Sure,
or like,
mashed potatoes and gravy.
I heard Tabasco. You like a little spicy.
A little spicy, yeah. I throw a little extra Tabasco on mine because, you know, and every once in a while, the Tabasco sometimes doesn't mix in with the injection. You know, like it's almost like an oil water type suspension type thing, but you know, every once in a while you can find a hot spot in the turkey where that spot of Tabasco got injected into, or you know. You try to keep it stirred up and keep it mixed up enough so that when you're, you know, and you just go along and you inject the legs and the thighs and the breasts, you know, five or six times on each side of the breast. And
is it just for flavor, or is it for tender,
both,
or for juice?
For flavor and to keep the moisture.
Okay, to keep the moisture.
And if you want, you know, after an hour and a half or so, it can be done with, a lot of times mine get done under 2 hours. Mm-hmm. You know, people think, oh, we got to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, get that turkey in the oven for 6 hours, and by the time noon rolls around, it'll be ready to, you know, and you pull the thing out of the oven and it's just as dry as shoe leather, you know, and you don't have to do that.
Okay.
Because these turkeys, you know, you take them off the grill then with the pan, and the juices are still in the pan, you know, and you can baste the turkey with those juices. And
is it crispy?
Very good. Crispy. Yeah, the skin is just perfect.
I know where to go next week.
Yeah.
And then what's your side? Mashed potato?
Cranberries, mashed potatoes, and gravy.
So do gravy.
Lefse, of course. You know, we gotta have lefse with our Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, lefse, sure.
And you know, yams or sweet potatoes.
What's yams?
Sweet potatoes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess.
With some brown sugar on.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I never thought about different Thanksgiving recipes, but I should investigate that for next year.
Sure.
That there's different injections. Yeah. I don't have a long Thanksgiving tradition yet or history, so it was really interesting to learn about our local contribution, actually, nationwide, I guess.
Yes.
And, it's a very relevant industry, I suppose. Autotech only was once the largest one. I think that was really, really interesting intel. And I'm definitely hungry right now, but I'm looking forward to Thanksgiving. And happy Thanksgiving to you.
Yes, and you too.
And thank you for coming again.
Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, have a good weekend.
Yes, you too.
Yeah, this was already our newest episode of the Lake Life Weekend podcast. We sure hope you enjoyed it. Tune in again next week with another great guest and updates. Always check out our website, lakelifeweekend.com. And if you have some comments, please feel free to email us at hello@lakelifeweekend.com. And you have a wonderful weekend ahead.